Kaboom.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. We're with you here on a Thursday night here in August, and we're having a great time. We are continuing the discussion about Bigfoot, which was so exciting last week. We had a great time. Got a couple of housekeeping notes to go through. First of all, Papa Stro and I were at the Charlotte Comic-Con this past weekend. It was wild and crazy. Wasn't it, Papa Stro?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a great time. As Steve Martin said, it was a wild and crazy time. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I had a blast.
It certainly was. And in my announcement for Comic-Con Stars tonight, I grabbed that photo of you, Papa Stro, and Lizard Man. So I sent that out to everybody on Comic-Con Stars along with Dorothy. And so anyway, we had a great time.
Dorothy loved Lizard Man.
I'm sure she did. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to see the two of them together. But no, it was a great time, and we're looking
Match
forward
made in heaven.
To our. You got it. Our next big event is CryptoCon in Charlotte on September the 30th /
nice.
October 1, and the event kicks off with an evening with Papa Stro. It will be a Q&A session starting at 6 p.m. on Saturday night, September the 30th, at Sticky Fingers in Concord Mills. And we're going to have a great time, good food, and we're going to enjoy asking Papa Stro all the cool questions we want, and he will tell us some stories. Papa Stro, will you please retell Matt Man that night?
Oh, yeah. Before I get to Matt Man, I just want to say I got so many stories to tell that on the night with Papa Stro, Maestro. It's going to be a great time. I would tell you now, but I can't, as Gene Okerlund said, I can't tell you now, but I can tell you on the night of Papa Stro Maestro. So come on down. Just a little sneak preview. Matt Man, right? Okay, well, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Matt Man, all right. Well, back in the 70s, back in 1975 or so, in the Pacific Northwest, Sandy Barr was the promoter. First off, Roddy Piper. The late Roddy Piper told me the story, and I really can't do Mr. Piper justice because he is just phenomenal telling road stories. But they were going to debut this cat named Matt Man, who dressed up like Batman, but due to the DC comic book rights, they had to call him Matt Man, but he still had the Batman outfit, cape, and everything. Well, he was supposed to come out doing a promo at ringside as a commentator by the villain at the time, Al Madrill, which some of you longtime wrestling fans will remember Al Madrill from World Class Championship
yep.
Wrestling. And so forth. Well, he was just come out ringside, jump on top of the table, and says, "I'm Matt Man," like a superhero, right? But keep in mind, this is like 1970-some watt TV, and there's no editing. Technology isn't the best, greatest in the world back then, and it's live. So if you screw up live, yeah, mess happens, right? So
you screwed up,
Shockmaster.
So the show starts, right? Al Madrill cuts the promo with the commentator, right? Here comes Matt Man, comes out Batman cape and all, runs down ringside, jumps on top of the table, slips, falls, busts his rear end on the floor. The crowd is like cackling, laughing, right? Al Madrill and the commentator look at each other in astonishment. And the commentator takes the microphone down to the messed up Matt Man on the floor and says, "Who are you?" And Matt Man is all crazed out, messed up, laying around. Floor says, "I'm Matt Man. Tell all your friends."
Oh,
it gets any better. The debut match of Matt Man was later on in the hour, right? Here comes Matt Man, Batman cape and all, to the ring. Starts the match. He's all fired up. Boom, boom, boom. They go at it. He slams the guy. He climbs to the top rope. Extends his hands like he's going to give him a Jimmy Superfly snuck a big splash off the top rope. But what he doesn't realize, the place they're having the event at was like one of those old like TV studios, kind of like Channel 5 in Memphis. And we used to tape the old Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling days down in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's loose wires protruding from the top of the ceiling. And Matt Man's hands accidentally touch one of those wires. and they touch, sparks flew in the air, blacks out the whole joint. People are just screaming, oh, God, freaking out, right? Seconds later, the lights come back on. Here is a smoking, steamy Matt Man on the top rope. Falls down to the canvas like a tree. Timber, boom. Crash landing. Misses the guy like a mile in the ring. Referee, he's just dumbfounded. He doesn't know what the heck to do, right? So he grabs the grabs Matt Man, throws him on top of his opponent, and counts 1, 2, 3. That was the beginning and the shocking end of Matt Man.
Nice.
That's just one of my favorite stories. I can just see the whole thing happen, Papa Stroh. Oh, my goodness. Kudos to Roddy Piper, who we – yeah, what a great wrestler, what a great person. And I know you got to, you knew him, and he was one of the all-time greats, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He was one of my favorites then, too.
And he still couldn't stand Mr. T.
Oh my goodness! You'll have to fill us in on that. If everybody wants to know about Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. T, come to Sticky Fingers 6 p.m. on Saturday, September the 30th, at Concord Mills. Papa Stroh, you'll be glad to fill us in on any of that, you know, won't you?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yep.
And you want to dial any like options, like a hotline? You'll be right there live. So.
That'll be great. And then, of course, Sunday, we have CryptoCon, and one of our speakers will be Darth Bill Lancaster, who is with us tonight. Darth Bill, how are you doing tonight?
Thanks for the entrance there.
Oh, anytime. I would have pyro, but you really can't see it.
Yeah. I felt the pyro from here. I was feeling the heat.
You know, like Goldberg.
Yeah.
Darth Bill. Dun, da, da, da.
Yeah. So anyway, Darth Bill, it's good to have you here. Also, we want to welcome back one of our other co-hosts, Dave Atwell. How are you doing, Dave?
How's it going, everybody? Everything is fine here. Mother Nature has blessed me with a very low humidity, nice, cool, breezy evening, so it's perfect for the cigar this evening. And, you know, looking forward to this fall weather coming up.
Oh yeah, me too.
We all are. So we want to get back to the action, as they might say in wrestling. We want to get back to the action here. We were having a great time talking the end of last week's Comic-Con Stars. We were talking about Dave Atwell had raised a question. He had raised the question of why don't we ever find carcasses or bones from Bigfoot. Dave, that was pretty much how you put that question, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's three factors that goes with any type of life. The three factors are, of course, death, defecation, and water. So you've got to have any of those to maintain. So, you know, going back, I mentioned the giant squid. You know, there had always been legends, and again, I'll repeat, anything in the water, I'm going to lean that way and say, hey, it could be, because there's, I mean, we just found in Indianapolis this week, for crying out loud, what kind of find was that? I mean, that was such a horrible, horrible thing that happened in World War II, and now, you know, they found a wreckage for that, so after, you know, 70-some-odd years. So what's going on in the oceans and the lakes and the ponds? Who knows? But, you know, here on land, it's kind of a different ball game because we kind of have a better tunity because, you know, we don't have gills to handle it. But nevertheless, I had talked about the giant squid, and they had been, you know, myths of these huge squids and, you know, whatnot. And then one of them washed up on the shore dead. They measured it. Mm. They did, you know, studies on it and everything. And before you know it, they started doing deep water study right around where they found it. And bigger than anything, they have found giant squid to be true. And so here
we go. I believe it.
Yeah.
I didn't really know there were female octopuses that even existed until I watched a James Bond movie years ago. And that was very educational.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no. And Dave, as he was bringing up last week, is, you know, why we can't find carcasses. And I had pointed out that, you know, being a deer hunter for years, I know there are deer, bear, bobcat, and every other manner of creature in the woods. But in my years of deer hunting, I never found a single deer skeleton or bear skeleton. And taking that even further, one of my heroes in the cryptozoology and Sasquatch world, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, he even goes into talking about basically how skeletons of really large creatures can just basically be reduced to nothing when they're exposed to the elements. And I mean, scavengers, like even squirrels and porcupines, will make a short work out of the calcium-rich antlers and bones on these animals. And I mean, besides the fact that you've got these scavengers, the chemistry that's found in the soil in a lot of our wet conifer forest and the volcanic sediments, because of the acidity in them, they'll reduce the and decompose the bones in just, you know, almost record time. And I mean, because what that's getting at too is, you know, the most likely place that you are going to find bones is in a in like a limestone cave, you know, something like that, where you don't have such high alkaline conditions. That was basically where I had kind of, I had to kind of relook at it. But when I was trying to give my rebuttal to the argument of where is the body and why don't we found it, or why don't we find it, excuse me there, I had remembered something I'd read from Dr. Meldrum. And so I took a second look at some of the research that he's done. And you know, this is something that just as common sense as being a hunter that I knew to be true, but he kind of put a little bit more of the science behind it. And that's why something as large as that, because even your African elephants, it's said that when they know it's time to die, you know, even over in Africa, you won't find a gigantic 500-pound scale or 5-ton skeleton laying out on the, you know, the range or the Serengeti or whatever, but they'll literally go to, you know, elephant graveyards, if you will, or caves, and go find a place to die, and it'll be kind of a reclusive area. So, you know, even something as large as that, it's very rare to find skeletons of those, because they do like a lot of other animals, including your common household cat and dog. They'll go find something to crawl up and under and just die, and then, you know, sooner or later nature takes its course, and you know, the evidence of their existence is gone.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So,
yeah,
sorry
yeah,
to
you
kind
make,
of
you make a good
Dan.
Point.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Dave.
But no, I mean, and I'm accepting that. No, that's good. Good to go. But again, I'm going to play devil's advocate, so it'll get ready for the constant barrage. So, okay, we got the bones disintegrating and whatnot. Nothing fossilizes, nothing like that. I mean, we've got mastodons we find that are huge and dinosaurs we find that are huge, and their bones have been
Bats
laying in
Chicago. Yep.
Yeah, for millions of years.
Chicago.
Again, it's one of those things where it's like, sooner or later, we have gotten a trip over one. It's the law of averages. And here I go with my Ian Malcolm. Nature finds a way. Sooner or later, one of these things has got to hit pay dirt. In other words, these guys who stay in the woods and look for these things, with a genuine interest in it, sooner or later, there's got to be one either injured, dead, or recently dead. And I'm here to tell you, if you find an 8-foot skeleton laying in the woods, I dare say it's not
like,
a missing person the case. You know what I mean?
Like,
so,
Anna Nicole, right? She's 8 foot.
Like Anna Nicole, exactly.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, what I'm getting at is that I, assuming that something as large a hominid as a Sasquatch, assuming, you know, you're talking about something that's top of the food chain and doesn't have any natural predators, and we assume it has a long life expectancy without having any predators and everything, that that death is more of a rare event, and, you know, normally they're going to die of natural causes. And, again, I think that, you know, they're going to secret themselves away into a place to where it's not going to be easy to find the remains. And I mean, you go back to stuff that, you know, you get into the conspiracy theories where the Smithsonian has actually confiscated these giant bones, 8-foot bones and whatnot, that basically they weren't even really attributed to Sasquatch, but to the giant red-haired men and whatnot that the Vikings had seen and whatnot. Those supposedly have been found in, you know, a lot of places across the United States. And when you delve into where did these go, they had been, you know, most of them had been taken back to the Smithsonian, and then they basically just disappeared. And it's one of those things that, you know, history is written by the winners, as they say. And can you imagine, you know, if the government had to come out with saying that, no, there were, you know, 8, 10, 15-foot giants that lived here before us, not just the Indians. And then what if they have to come out and say that not only was that back then, but we have a species that has survived and still living in our forest to this day. And again, we have such a vast amount of forest land in the United States alone and Alaska and, of course, Canada, that it would be so easy for, you know, creatures like this to exist, even if they were, you know, relatives of Gigantopithecus, as a lot of folks and even Dr. Meldrum will support to an extent of that idea. But anyways, it's you know, it's something else to consider.
Absolutely. Now we're fortunate tonight. We are now joined by a surprise guest, Anthony Dowling from Raleigh. Anthony, how are you doing?
Oh, what's up?
Can you hear me?
Anthony! Loud and clear, buddy.
Be heard. Yes, sir.
Hey, yes, sir. I couldn't resist. You're talking about Bigfoot, and it got my attention.
That's great. Now, you texted me a question.
Here we go.
And so I immediately said to myself, well, Anthony now gets to ask that question himself. So anyway, Anthony, I'd like to introduce you to Bill, better known as Darth Bill Lancaster. Darth Bill, this is Anthony Dowling, a friend of Comic-Con star from Raleigh.
How you doing, Anthony?
With Eno River Media. And
Darth,
and Anthony,
I love
what's your question?
Well, Darth, I love your entrance music. Just top-notch, buddy. Yes.
We work out the copyright issues there, and we'll be using that more often.
I might know if a person or two that knows the guy who wrote it, so we might be able to figure something out.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
Here's my question. Now, that makes sense because I've never heard of a hunter coming along and saying, oh, look, there's a decomposed bear. Or, oh, look, there's a decomposed deer. I mean, that makes sense. I understand, in fact, that a lot of times when dead bodies, human bodies, are put out in the wilderness, they're tore apart. They're dragged all over the place. So that one of the reasons why you don't find them. But my question is, since there is so much intensity and vigor trying to find these animals, why they have drones and they have infrared. Why can't we just send a bunch of drones out there with infrared and start seeing, you know, these big shapes? They're going to, you know, they have heat. They're warm blooded, right?
Well, would you like to hear my reply to some of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I am interested.
All right. First of all, I happen to have just recently gotten me a 4K drone, and just do a little plug here because they're fantastic, at DJI Mavic Pro. It'll hook up to 20 GLONASS satellites. It's the smartest, closest thing to military technology. I'm sure it was used and then handed down to us as they advance. Anyways, last week I actually went out with my buddy Sam Deloach, Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization, and we were doing a little we do another thing on the side called Bigfoot BS with Bill and Sam, where we kind of talk about encounters with folks and do some stuff that you would do in the field, whatnot. We took the drone out, and one of the things I was wanting to do was put the drone just above the tree line. We were in a bunch of pines. It appeared years and years ago, I mean probably hundreds of years ago, they were planted as like a Christmas tree farm or something, and these things were 85 feet tall. And I put the drone up about 125 feet over. So I wanted to be so that I could point the camera straight down so that I could see the forest floor through the trees. And it was, even at 125 feet, it was absolutely amazing what you could see on that floor. And this thing has a 4.3 mile range. I can take it away from me. So it'll fly a little over 8 miles round trip, but you would literally be able to put this thing up out of the, you know, sense and smell and sound of a lot of creatures, and it would make sense that you should be able to put these up and find something. That is an emerging technology that I'm hoping that, you know, you're exactly right. We will, because we know that they have infrared and FLIR, and surely they can adapt that to a civilian drone. Right now you can't, because you can't fly these things except for 30 minutes before sunrise and 30 minutes after sunrise. It's illegal to fly them any other time. But once they get to the point that they allow you, if you have FLIR and night vision, to do it, then you've got to open up a whole new ballgame there. But that being said, going along with that, folks have brought up the question of, we have these game cams that are sold at every Cabela's, Bass Pro Shop, Walmart, every hole in the wall. There's just tons of them out there. And how come we don't catch nothing but deer and squirrel and the leaves blowing around? Why don't we catch something like a, you know, something as large as a Sasquatch on there? And one of the favorite speakers I listened to was Bill Drungenis. He has done a lot of field research, and he does a lot of studying and engineering on cameras specifically designed for capturing stuff like this in the field. And last year at a conference that he gave that I listened to, he pointed out something that I thought was absolutely interesting. And I know the numbers are correct, but I believe he was talking about in the last 5 years or since 2005. I can't remember that directly. But he basically said, if you took all of the game cameras that you can put on trees, is what we're talking about, not the plot watchers that are actually on the deer feeders and whatnot, but if you took all of the game cameras that have been sold in the United States, and you put every single one of them out at one time, this is hard to believe, but they would only cover 0.5% of the total forest land in the United States. That's every one of them sold within like the last 5 or 10 years. That, to me, shows you, people keep going, there's game cameras everywhere. Well, if you put every one of them out, our forests are so vast, they're still only going to cover 0.5% of that. And then if you consider the plot watchers that Mr. Drungenis was talking about, which are the cameras that are stationed on these feeding buckets and whatnot for deer and everything, that would allow you another 0.88% of the forested land in the United States to be covered. So you still have such a small area that we can still see into, because that's why it's so easy for something this large to hide this long and go undetected, because as our technology allows us to encroach further into forested land, I believe that's why we're starting to have more encounters, because we're getting into land we were never really intended to be able to get into and see and show and share. But it also shows you that there's still so much of that land out there that it makes it still near impossible, as I had pointed out to Dr. John last week, that me being a photographer, amateur photographer and filmmaker, that even when I've got my camera set up and ready to go, and we were out, as an example, about 3 weeks ago on an expedition in High Knob, Virginia, about the seven or eight of us, and we had been seeing some bear sign, and we were pretty sure we were on the trail of a black bear, and a couple of the guys ahead of us, Matthew Delph and Michael Cook of Cook Cryptid Research, they saw something move, and I've got a camera rolling behind them with, you know, a telephoto lens on it. It was my wide angle, not a zoom, but I was literally looking up there, focusing in, put it on autofocus and everything, and was in as much of a controlled outdoor environment as I could. And other than the guys saw something big, kind of like get down and go behind a tree, which I would assume was either a cub, bear cub on a tree, or a black bear standing up and going down to all fours and then disappearing. I still wasn't, even after looking at the video of them going, hey, guys, you know, look this way. And to be honest with you can see what I'm talking about when that happens. If you happen to go to my Darth Bill 68 channel, episode 8, part 1, is where that happens towards the end. That being said, I've been put in that situation, and it is hard to, you know, we're pretty sure it was a bear, not a Sasquatch, but I had everything you would want to have, and it was in a daylight evening situation to where if there was something, I should be able to get it, and still it was hard to, you know, to get a good shot. I couldn't catch what they had saw. It happened that quick.
Well, do you think leaving the Reese's Pieces trail in the woods would help? I mean, he's got like candy.
Well, I think if you're looking for E.T., then yeah. If you're looking for E.T., Reese's Pieces will work. Yeah.
Worth a shot.
If you think about it, truly, if you think about it, we don't necessarily have to put cameras everywhere. We just have to put cameras where there is the most occurrences of sightings. So you can kind of shrink down your area a great deal if you're strategic about it. And, you know, probably, no, you're right, it would take, you know, hundreds of thousands of cameras to catch a forest. And that's like the one place left in the United States that's not monitored by Big Brother, and we're suggesting to put cameras there.
Irony.
Yeah.
I mean, you have
you,
folks.
It's a drum roll for the ting.
Yeah.
And this is crazy because you literally have folks, credible sources like law enforcement and everything, that when they actually get involved in these 911 calls, which I find very interesting, and I listened to a story the other night on the Wes Germer's Sasquatch Chronicles. Law enforcement gets involved in something like this, and they are trained observers. These guys' testimony can be used in the court of law. And when a law enforcement officer says that he saw something, but then you have people from, you know, these like Men in Black stuff, but people from the Department of Interior show up. What would the Department of Interior to have to do with that, except that they are over – that largest unpoliced area, the, you know, our national forest and everything. And it goes back to, you know, the argument. Do you think that there is actually a government cover-up and they've already said, yeah, there is a Sasquatch Bigfoot out there? The more
when you look
I get
at this
into
red
this,
light, it will flash.
Yeah, yeah. The more I get into this, the more I have to believe that it is one of those things, just like the whole alien conspiracy. If they were to come out and say, folks, besides the occasional mountain lion and grizzly bear and you know, stuff like this that you run into the woods, there is also, we're going to admit, 8 to 15-foot creatures that can abduct, can kill you, can be cannibalistic. Some of them are nice, just like some people are nice, though. They would never, ever want that to get out because, again, like I said last week, you look at Google Earth and look at the green versus the gray on that map. There's a whole lot of green, and you're talking about a whole lot of dollars, you know, for forest industry and for tourism industry that would be lost. And, you know, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense why the government would want to keep it hid, and I think it also makes perfect sense why the National Park Service has made it illegal for someone like myself to fly a drone in there.
You want to go to Cambodia? Ma.
But Bill, you hit the nail on the head there when you talk about tourism. I mean, the city of Myrtle Beach will do everything in its power to keep a shark report out of the newspapers. When a shark report hits, people lose money, and it is a matter of economics. If I'm not saying what's out there, but I'm just saying if there's anything that's potentially bad news that can hurt people's pocketbooks, they will keep it quiet. And we all know that is the case. And it's like
exactly.
So,
just like watching Jaws.
Yeah. Jaws.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, last week I even brought up the thing, you know, about what's going on with the research. And see, we're kind of backtracking on that right now is that, and let me tell you something. I've said it on the show, I don't know how many times, I do believe American people need to be protected from themselves sometimes. I mean, let's look at the last two presidents we've had, right? So, in the event, do I believe that there's some things out there the government knows that we don't need to know? Absolutely, because there's people out there that are doing good to get to work every day without screwing it up. So, that being said, knowing that there is a Bigfoot floating around or aliens or whatever else, okay, these people don't need that type of knowledge, and it needs to be reserved for people that can handle that level of knowledge. Okay, so my question last week was, when we're putting these state-of-the-art submarines into the oceans, and when we're putting these robots on Mars and you know the moons around Saturn and all that kind of stuff, why are we putting a half dozen rednecks in a tent in the middle of the woods? Why don't we take that way? And if the government's involved,
come on, man.
Are they putting that same amount of research and going to what Mr. Dowling was talking about with the trail cams and everything? You know, screw hanging them on a tree. Put them in the water. Take a stick, jab it in the ground, and put that sucker in the middle of the pond where that thing's got to swim out. If it's curious and it looks at it and goes, what the hell is that sticking out of the pond? He's got to swim out to it, which gives us all kinds of time to do some say cheese with this guy, right? So why
you're
don't
sure not
we
taking
put
the temperature,
them,
that's for sure.
Why don't we put them in the water to where, because water, again, you have to have it to survive unless there's one creature on the planet that does not require water. So, you know, it goes back again to that, if the government is involved, why are they not using that same technology that we're using?
I wish we had Dr. Rourke from Independence Day. He can probably answer that question.
I think two of the things that you brought up, two of the things you brought up, all the money and technology we spend in Mars and all the money and technology we spend in underwater and everything, it kind of proves my point again. How many human beings are likely to be involved in something on Mars that would actually, short of them coming out and saying there's aliens, which we know that'll never happen because you just explained why it would happen, wouldn't happen, mass hysteria, there's less likely a chance for anyone to be affected or hurt directly by them, four or five people and, you know, two dozen in a room back in Houston or wherever now, discovering something like that. And then you've got someone in a biosphere or a little mini sub and some people on a ship above you, and there's absolutely no one around you but miles and miles of ocean and water. So therefore, when they discover something like the giant squid and everything, that's too far from us. That's never going to touch us. They discover a parasite on Mars. That's too far from us. That's never going to touch us or affect us. But you discover and say something like that, and it's right out at your local park or where you used to take the kids camping and hiking at and everything, that hits home and that's going to affect us. That's why I think they're not dumping money, and you have what you call a dozen rednecks in a tent, which we prefer to call civilian researchers. Have folks like
as
that.
As you should. As you should.
The Beverly Hillbillies.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember it was an effort back in the 90s, and it was called A Day in the Life. And
Right. Basically
they took one day, 24 hours, and they wanted everyone, as many people on the planet as possible, to take a picture of what they were doing between, one p.m. to 2 p.m., you know, their time period, their day, right?
Right.
And it was spectacular, and you had millions of people involved. Why can't we do something like that? A day, you know, pick one day and have every single person who is involved in this at all go into a certain section and blanket that area. And then
almost do like they do for a search, you know, missing person search, same thing.
Exactly.
Right.
One day. And you do, and now if you do this year after year, right? And it becomes bigger. You know, the fireman. What's the thing out in the desert called? Burning Man.
Yeah.
That started with 20 people on the beach in San Francisco burning a bonfire.
Mm-hmm.
And then the San Francisco police said, oh, okay, it's kind of getting big. You're getting 50, 60 people here. And then they said, well, then we'll move it. And they found a little place out in the desert where nobody, it was secret. And it was only, you could only be there, you know, by invitation. And it's kind of gotten, you know, commercial now, kind of. But 100,000 people show up.
Mm-hmm.
The you could do that year after year. You think about what you could do if you concentrate on one area, on one day, and attack it from all four sides, northwest, east, south. It would be spectacular. And, you know, you give that a decade and you don't find anything, something's up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
oh,
then
yeah.
Give it up.
Yeah.
I think
that would be awesome, but you've basically relegated the Bigfoot community, because it's such a taboo subject, to, you know, Facebook and social media and everything. And when you have, you know, the folks like Meldrum and Bindernagel involved in it, the scientists and everything, they get, you know, ridiculed for it and everything. And so, again, I think that if you were to be able to mobilize folks, do a flash mob of we're going to go Bigfooting or whatever you want to call it, I think that if that actually started to happen, that you would have, you literally, I think it's that real of a possibility that it exists out there, that the government will do everything they can to squash it, because I've heard too many stories of law enforcement folks that are, you know, trained eyewitnesses basically that end up getting discredited and asked to resign and everything when they get involved in something like this in a 911 call case or whatnot. That I still think that if you were to try to actually do that, it's going to take a body and someone bringing it to the right person that can make it go public before it can get squashed to make it into the public eye. But I still just think that, and I know right now I sound more like instead of being interested in Bigfoot, that I'm more interested in the government conspiracy theories, but I still think that it's one of those things that if you were able to mobilize folks, and that's an awesome, great idea. And I mean, I'll actually share that idea with all of the groups that I'm involved with on social media. And that is a really good idea, but I just think that something like that started and then, you're going to have some kind of intervention.
Maybe Bigfoot is bionic.
He wasn't bionic. It took a bionic man to wrestle with him.
That's true. Yeah.
Redoing $6 million man. They're thinking of redoing that. But
fantastic.
When was the day that footage was taped? That famous footage.
1967. Patterson Gimlin. I'm trying to think of the exact date, but I know it was 1967 was when that was taken.
Okay, let's see what we got.
Because it was basically it was August 27th of 58 when Jerry Crew, the tractor driver, found those famous footprints that he made got Bob Titmus, a taxidermy guy, to help him learn how to cast them, and that's where you got the phrase Bigfoot when it made it into the paper, and from that general area was where all of this came about, that Patterson and Gimlin were searching for the sightings and whatnot that they had been hearing going on up in the Bluff Creek area. But
says Friday, October 20th. Why don't we have October 20th as the day?
Mm-hmm.
That's Bigfoot.
That'd be awesome.
Day.
Yeah.
It's good weather.
It's a really
good
idea.
It's not too hot. It's not too, not too bad. I don't know. I don't think it gets bad weather up there on October 20th. But it is, that's the day.
I should have known that, because that's the 50th anniversary of the footage is this year, and I actually should have known that because they're celebrating that. So.
Oh wow! So I mean, if you could get all those, and I saw a really great documentary, I think on Netflix actually, about Bigfoot, and it was the National Geographic going into it, and they were kind of deconstructing the way this the footage creature, the Bigfoot on the footage, walked, and the way they brought in the footage and actually painstakingly transferred it into HD footage, and then from that HD footage they ran it through a computer and recreated the actual environment. Went up there, used lasers, lasered the whole exact, that exact place, lasered the whole place, and then married the two, and then in, simulated world, it was supposed to do. And basically, they came up with, there is no way a man in a ape suit could have done it. And everything said, this is a real creature.
Yeah.
How about that? National Geographic.
Well,
but so
this is let me
pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, just to tell you, and I mean, I know I kind of keep going back to one of my heroes, but Dr. Jeff Meldrum, when I had actually got to meet him and interview him for my Cultured Bigfoot documentary, one of the stories I had heard, which he shared with me, and it was awesome to find out this was a true story, was that there's a thing believers and knowers, and a lot of the scientists don't want to say I believe, because it implies, you know, faith. You're believing without seeing and everything. But basically, a fan had came up to him and had a shirt that said, I believe in Bigfoot since 1967. And Dr. Meldrum took the Sharpie he was about to sign the shirt with and marked out believed and wrote convinced since 1967. And I thought that was awesome, because to me, for a man that is a professor of anatomy and anthropology at the Department of Biological Sciences at Idaho State University, to be convinced enough to write, you know, books on it and have Sasquatch field guides and wildman guides put out on it. This man has everything to lose. Now, you can argue the man gets paid to speak and everything, yeah, but he is still a professor at this university, and he has his entire reputation to lose. And when you have folks like him and John Bendernagel involved in it out of Canada, it just, the more I get into this, the more questions. But those academia that have such high credits and credibility, that have everything in the world to lose, including being ridiculed. I mean, for goodness sakes, Dr. Jane Goodall proved that the mountain gorillas existed. And her family, years ago, when she was trying to do some studying on Bigfoot and everything, the story goes that they kept her from doing that because they didn't want her reputation to be ruined. But in my book from Dr. Mildren, Sasquatch Legend Meets Science, Jane Goodall is quoted as saying that the book brings a much-needed level and Dr. Meldrum of scientific analysis to the Sasquatch Bigfoot debate. Now, you got someone that every one of us knows, Jane Goodall. You know, basically, that's kind of like, you know, Superman or the president. You know that name because she's you know, famous for the mountain gorillas. You have someone like that, and all of a sudden you say to someone who's arguing with you that this doesn't exist, and you say, you know Jane Goodall? Oh, yeah, I know Jane Goodall. Well, let me quote you what she says about this in Dr. Meldrum's book. And you can even find a radio interview on NPR with her where she's talking about this, and it's just fascinating. All of a sudden you listen to the stuff that kind of gets pushed back to the side, and, I mean, going all the way back into what I talked about last week, you know, the Native Americans have 60-some-odd names for this creature, and it's accepted as part of their culture and another creature in the woods and everything, but we choose to push that aside. So, I mean, I know, like, I sound like I'm running for Bigfoot for president, but I just, you know, this is stuff that's fascinated me for years, and I just kind of get a little bit into it when we start trying to, the more I become involved and they try and throw dirt on it, the more I'm like, man, there's something to this. No, I've not seen one. And I say, look, man, I'm, you know, 305 pounds, 6 foot four. I'm not a little guy, but I still don't know if I want to see one in the woods either.
Well, Bill,
I want to hang out with him, play cards.
You know, I want to jump in with you and explain just a little bit about how the scientific community works and why they don't study Bigfoot. Because having, you know, being a former college professor, grants which are used for research funds to keep professors, you know, to enable them to do their research, pay for it, and to pay graduate assistants and undergraduates, those grants come almost exclusively from the National Science Foundation, or they are, you know, doled out by the National Science Foundation. Now, they are not going to give any money to anything that is speculative. They have their own agenda. National Science Foundation has billions of dollars that they fund research, and they are flat out not going to give money for anything that is speculative. They're going to research, you know, those governing bodies are going to give money to research what they want researched. Therefore, university professors, by and large, unless they want to go on off and do their own unfunded research, which makes it very difficult to get tenure, they have to research projects that the National Science Foundation will approve. So you've got absolutely a situation where Bigfoot research, you know, so much research that would really do people some good will never happen because it is so tightly controlled by the folks that control those billions of dollars. And in it, with the closed-mindedness of those folks, that's one reason why we've got so many problems with Big Pharma, how they have been able to, you know, do what they do. NSF will keep universities out of certain research to allow it to be done by private organizations. Yes, this may sound like conspiracy theory, but no, it is accurate. They keep people out of certain areas so that certain companies can profit, because if many universities and researchers would start doing research, they would find alternative cures and everything, but they can't get that funded. So you've got to look at it. There are controls over what research will be funded, and that's your career at a major university. You've got to get those grants. And so that's why many things will not happen. So, you know, that's an aside, but that's from experience. And I remember playing golf. I played 18 holes with a former executive director of part of the NSF. And the first thing that out of her mouth, what is your research hypothesis? It's not, hello, how are you doing? Just, what are you researching? And so you say what you're researching, and this, well, we don't give money for things like that. And that's the first conversation before, hello, how are you? What's your name? I found that quite amazing. And so that's just the way it is. So the scientific community is a little, at least at the university level, is bound and gagged from doing certain things because of their own, you know, because to try to keep their careers. So that's the answer to that. And I'll turn it back over to you. But I just wanted to let everybody know that from what I've seen, that's how it works. If anyone can show me that it doesn't, please contact me and we'll have you on the show.
Oh, yeah. So many things in society and life and the world, it's all controlled. I mean, even in our DNA,
if you
examine our DNA, there's a little slash, if you notice, in our DNA that kind of prohibits us from accepting more knowledge, you know, than the human capacity could take, basically. And it's just like, you know, there's some people out there that have had like extra perception abilities and stuff that kind of went past that border of the DNA, the regular DNA, human DNA. And so with that being said, something like a Bigfoot or Sasquatch that has like superhuman abilities, it's very well possible, because you do have those rarities in nature. I mean, we see it all the time. We see with the discoveries that we've mentioned tonight. We've seen the discoveries that every now and then it pops up on the news in different parts of the world. So I really, you know, even though things are controlled to an extent with society and government and all that, that you have those occasions where you see a glimpse of what's really out there and those oddities that are like here among us.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, and I mean to make it, and I mean you kind of get into the supernatural, the paranormal type aspects that are associated with Bigfoot and the orbs and the mind speak, and you can go all into the woo and all that stuff like that. But a creature that's literally survived hidden has got to have a certain amount of intelligence and abilities. And for the folks that say they don't, I mean, goodness gracious, go out in your backyard this summer and look at the lightning bugs. The thing can make its butt light up. Go ahead and explain that. You know, I mean, so how in the world would something as wild as a Bigfoot, how wild would it be to believe that these have certain supernatural abilities? And I know that's a really weird analogy, but something just as simple as walking out and going, that is amazing that bug can do that. Well, something as untouched that we don't know that much about as Bigfoot, we have no idea what kind of abilities a creature like that could have, you know. Anyways, just my opinion. Again, I'm just a regular guy involved in this, doing some research. I'm not an expert, and I don't claim to be, and I've found out there are no experts in the field. but you just have those certain scientists that are a whole lot closer to experts in the field and more qualified to give better answers than I do. But basically, I study these guys so that I can give, you know, decent answers like I try to give to, you know, folks every day, and in this case, to folks like you.
Okay.
Very cool.
And you
sorry,
know,
I didn't mean to bring the room down.
No.
No, it's still another one. It's getting too late in the show, but let me just drop this little bit here, and then we'll just move on, because I know the show's getting close, but
no,
I'm sitting
actually,
here thinking.
Dave, I put another 30 minutes on the show tonight, just so that you know.
What? Oh, goody. Okay.
No,
so
goody.
Here we go again.
Okay.
We need right. large. Are you ready? Okay, so
Everything
we've seen, heard about a Bigfoot, all right? Anybody who's seen one, going back to the film in 67, these Bigfoot are always getting out of Dodge. And you just brought up the higher level of intelligence and that kind of stuff, right? So Here lies the next 400-pound gorilla in the room that I'm going to throw at you, is you're in the woods, and not you in particular. You're a Bigfoot. You're in the woods. All right. I've been in the woods myself. There are snakes out there, like copperheads, that will make a trip across the woods to come get you. There are, you know, mountain lions, cougars, bears, whatever, floating around in the woods. And you're going to be out of luck if you cross their path. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. All right? You stated earlier that a Bigfoot, something that size, would have no natural predators, which I buy. You know, because if I'm, you know, if I'm a bobcat, I'm not screwing with a Bigfoot either. All right. That being said, why are these things so shy? Why are these things so apprehensive and not more aggressive by nature? And again, I say by nature, by pure instinct, because size matters, you know, when it comes down to that stuff. You know, you don't see bunny rabbits going up to a bear and going, brah. Why? Because they're bunny rabbits. Okay.
Well, let me,
so
let me ask you this. You don't see giraffes or you don't see elephants by nature being aggressive.
Oh, elephants are aggressive. They're very
only,
not aggressive, but they're
only,
very protective.
They're protective. They're, I don't think anybody would describe them as aggressive. The until they get sick or
right when they're addled, of course,
right,
they can be aggressive.
But I think
you know
when
what
you
I mean?
Get a certain size, when you get a certain size, you don't need to be aggressive.
Well,
I mean
that,
nobody
yeah,
pulling
you're
a killer
the food
whale
chain,
tail.
Right?
You know what I mean?
here's the thing.
Yeah, but you understand where I'm coming from. I mean, what
yeah,
makes a great white shark a great white shark is the size of it. If it wasn't for a great white shark being the size that it is, Peter Benchley would have wrote about a sand shark or whatever. But the point being is that the great white shark is a huge species of shark. And my question on the Bigfoot thing is, again, if you're that size, and my catchphrase at work all the time, if I'm King Kong, I don't ration any bananas. I eat every banana in the jungle. It's King Kong.
Well,
I think a
lot of it has to do with the intelligence and the survivability, as far as you want to know why they're so shy and don't seem, you know, to be, they're that big and not aggressive. Well, we don't know that they aren't aggressive, because I've also heard stories, I mean, besides the intelligence factor that they've stayed hidden this long, I believe they do that absolutely on purpose. They'll stand still, they'll get down on all fours, spider crawl, whatever, to stay unnoticed until they absolutely are noticed. But there's also equally stories of stuff being thrown at folks and aggressive encounters and vehicles being shaken and campers being overturned and different stuff like this. There's also things of people disappearing in woods or being thrown off cliffs in woods or whatnot. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, when it ends up happening, they have every kind of an answer as to they fell while they were hiking, to it was a mountain lion or a bear attack, when a lot of the ones that I've read about come under very suspicious circumstances, and basically it looks like they're trying to say everything but this was an aggressive Bigfoot encounter or something like that. So I would say, you know, they're shy by nature is a sign of intelligence, but to say that, you know, we don't hear of aggressive encounters, I say that there are aggressive encounters, but you don't hear of an aggressive Bigfoot encounter because in, you know, quote unquote, they don't exist. And so they're written off as bear, right? They're written off as bear, mountain lion, or something else, or they fell off a cliff.
Yeah, I'll buy it.
Okay.
I'll buy that. It just, again, it's so many things that goes into this, and that's the best part about being the naysayer on stuff. You know what I mean? And to be quite honest with you, I enjoy discovery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's nothing more interesting to me than when they find, you know, you always look on online for the news feed and they'll say, hey, large burial, ancient burial plot found under garage in Rome. And I'm clicking on it and I'm reading it. And all it's about is the same old thing. They found 100 skeletons from 1,000 years ago. And I'm reading this word for word and I'm like, wow, you know. So discovery in itself is the grandest thing. You know what I mean? I think it was Paul Harvey that said his biggest regret of dying was the fact that he wasn't going to live long enough to see the advances in medicine and technology. You know, I totally agree with that. It's just there's so many, and the Abominable Snowman falls in there with it, and Bigfoot, of course, and I guess they're relatively alike.
Right.
It's just there's been so many, I'll use the term backflow, if you will, for every answer kind of repeats the question on those. And that's what makes it such a good argumental point for a guy like me that just likes to stir the pot, the instigator. But, you know, there's just so much that goes into it. And I'll be honest with you,
yeah,
the best thing I've heard in the whole conversation tonight, and everybody's going to laugh, is the government. Do government cover things up all the time?
Well, here's
all
something to think about, too, that I neglected to bring up earlier. But I'm going to throw it out there anyway. What the heck? You guys heard the term Nephilim.
Yeah.
Which was back in biblical times, Nephilim was known to the world as giants.
Right.
And a lot of your Egyptian rulers and Egyptian people, they looked up to the Nephilim as gods. They had the animal heads and the gigantic human bodies, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, supposedly the Nephilim got wiped out, whether it be Noah's flood or what have you, right? It's a pretty good possibility that a lot of the reasons why you don't see any remains of a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or so forth, because they are actually descendants of the Nephilim, which were, if you know anything about Nephilim, did the research, they were half angel, half human.
Right.
Right. So it could be a
right.
possibility that the reason why you haven't found any remains of these Bigfoots or Sasquatch is because they're not mortal. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and I mean, that's one of those. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
But I mean, it's just a theory in itself. But I mean, it wouldn't make a lot of sense.
No, and it's one of those things that, trust me, I've said this before, and I'll keep saying, the further I get into investigating this, learning more about the Bigfoot phenomenon, the more questions come up. And listen, I said this to someone before, the easiest answer, and it may have been on the last show, the easiest answer would be these things are paranormal and they are descendants of the Nephilim. That would be the easiest answer, because then it would explain, oh, that's why we don't find bodies. Oh, that's why they seem like they disappear. That's why they seem like they're orbs sometimes. When you get into all of the what they call the woo crowd stuff and everything, if that were true, that would be the easiest answer to the whole Bigfoot Sasquatch thing, phenomenon. And I'll be honest with you, it's one of those things that, you know, more reading, more listening and researching and everything. And who's to say that that isn't exactly what it is? Because, I mean, they talk about the, you know, the giants. And, I mean, we all heard of, you know, David and Goliath. And I mean, I have a very good friend, Dr. David Floyd, who's a professor down at, and I believe I get this right, South Charleston University. And he actually will be speaking at the International Bigfoot Conference here in a week or two. Out on the West Coast, and he speaks about the myths and legends around these type of beings, the woodwoos, the trolls, the green man, the wild man, the hairy man, and even, you know, Beowulf and Grendel and stuff, and how a lot of these things are based on stories, and the stories turn into, or an event turns into a story, and a story turns into a legend, and a legend turns into a myth. And how a lot of folks will take, you know, stuff in the Bible and just say, and I happen to be a Christian and I believe that it is God's word. But folks will say that, you know, a lot of the stuff in there, they'll want to pick it apart. And this is just myth and this is just legend and poetry that folks wrote down, and you take it the way you do. Well, you know, if you take it like I do and you read about this stuff that talks about, you know, these giants and unicorns and stuff like that, and these wild hairy men, and you can dissect it and get you a good concordance and a study Bible and pick apart, and it would be very easy to make that tie into thinking that these are actually, you know, possibly descendants of the Nephilim. And I mean, I believe that one of the things that, you know, and that basically it, my faith, you know, tells me that there is a divide, God's grace, that keeps evil at bay from us to a certain extent. And basically these demons and everything haven't been cast into the lake of fire at this point. And what's to say that the divide that was put between us until the end's time was actually this gigantic forest that engulfs the forest and the waters that engulf most of the world, and these things are hid out there, and we're not meant to come in contact with them, but our technology, and we've lived long enough on this planet that we've started encroaching in there, and then that just opens up a whole other can of worms. What if exactly what you said is exactly right? Wow. What an easy answer it would be to a ton of Bigfoot questions, but wow, how many more questions does that open up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the upheaval and everything, and I've even said same thing about Christianity or Muslim faith or something like that. You know, we all know that the Muslim faith was born from, you know, it's a branch from Abraham, and there's a lot that went on in the Quran that is actual that matches up with the Bible and everything. But if science was the turnaround, I say science, I shouldn't say science, I guess I should say just humanity in itself. Yeah, you know, there's still people walking around, and I know I'm going to pay for it in the afterlife, but I make jokes all the time about Jesus might have looked like George Costanza, and we don't even know it. Nobody really knows. But if we were to somehow, and going back to the government conspiracy side of things, in the event that some type of conclusive, absolute, head-on evidence outside of faith of Jesus, what would it do to the planet? You know what I mean? What would it do? You know, I mean, it would galvanize the Christian faith, but then for these wackos that are out there, what would it do? You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I can see where the argument's there that, you know, perhaps these things are out there. The government knows, and the government's not going to say anything. I can buy that.
let me, if I could ask something, are you going to that conference, the Bigfoot conference?
In the International Bigfoot Conference, I will not be going. I would love to go, but I will not be going. That's literally in just a couple weeks, and
you know,
it's actually
anybody.
Do
you know anybody who is?
Yeah, no, my good friend Dr. David Floyd is actually a speaker at the conference.
Could you maybe mention to him? I looked it up. That effort was by YouTube, and it's called Life in a Day. And they picked one day, July 24th, 2010, and they wanted everybody to upload videos of what you did that day. And then they put together a really cool trailer, a movie. So if it's called Life in a Day. So if you could suggest to them, hey, maybe we could do a Life in a Day of Bigfoot for October 20th, he could actually get a feel.
I think the government's cutting into our broadcast.
You know,
they must be listening. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He could get a feel if anybody likes that.
Sorry about that.
Because you're going to have everybody right there at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. No, actually, I will mention that to him probably if I don't this evening, tomorrow, because that is actually an awesome idea. And being that October 20th is the 50th anniversary, you could literally make, just like we have May the 4th as the Star Wars Day, May the 4th be with
you.
You could have October 20th as Bigfoot Day. And on that day, every year, every researcher go into the field with armed with cameras and recording equipment, and everybody pull their resources. You know, someone get that .com right now and figure out how to monetize it. And, you can actually make some good money on furthering the research.
You can just hold on right now, and you know that I'm now going to schedule a con on October the 20th.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you. That right there is an awesome call right there. I mean, you've got the mission, you've got the date, you've got the time. Holy smokes. You might have just done something just then.
There you go.
It certainly brings attention to it at least one day a year. And you can, because Bigfoot is all over the place, you could identify, and the key is getting a lot of people in one area. So you could identify, let's say, 7 different strategic forests in the nation. Just like with the eclipse that we had, where they had specific places everybody went, you identify 7 different places or however. And the you say, you know, for your area, you go there. If you're into Bigfoot, everybody show up here. We are going, we're going to get it from north, south, east, and west. We are going to cover this.
And grid it out. Yeah,
and grit it out.
Awesome. And you know, might trip around and find one. You know what I mean? And actually have something that will legitimize the entire thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, it would be spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would be absolutely spectacular.
Because
it would be tough
to squash. You know, if you have 3 guys out there looking, and one guy says, "Hey, man, I found something." Yeah, those 3 guys can end up in the river somewhere before day's up. But when you have an entire contingency of people, and when I say a contingency of people, not my analogy of 6 rednecks in a tent, but you have 6 people that are actually professors and law enforcement and that kind of stuff, all walks of life, you can't squash that. You know what I mean? It's going to get out somehow, some way. No, that's a fantastic idea.
And one of the cool things that they're working on, they actually have, is there is certain software on all these drones that you can purchase. And this guy has designed some software that you load on it, somehow integrate, and now you can coordinate all the drones at the same time so they don't fly into each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've seen them do that.
Imagine 400 people searching and 200 drones overhead in unison doing a search pattern also.
Combing. Yep, yep.
That's awesome.
And you might screw around and find a species of something else. Yeah, I mean, you might find a snake or a bird or something like that.
They're supposed to
fall on the ground. Or an illegal pot farm.
Well, I mean, hey, those things get tripped over from time to time. Yeah.
Far out, man.
Yeah. Well, like I said, too, the government thing, and the money thing, because I think I even brought it up the last time, the whole spotted owl theory, where on the West Coast they found this spotted owl that was almost extinct, and all of a sudden they made all of this forest land that was used for timber and everything, made it protected land, and it ruined a lot of the forestry industry. And it was all about money, and that's why a lot of folks will liken the Bigfoot to the spotted owl theory, that, like I had said, if you prove something like this exists, besides, you know, the public freaking out, all of a sudden you've got to make all this area a national protected area, and all of a sudden that cuts into dollars, even into the park service, because they're not going to let you in a park that you know something like that that's, you know, beyond the capabilities of a grizzly or a mountain lion. And so you know, mm-hmm. that's one of those. I think that the whole spotted owl theory goes right along with the Sasquatch theory. It's all about the money and how much money would they lose protecting that creature once they discovered it is a real creature.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, or think of actually do the reverse of that. Think of the money in the industry that it would generate on the research alone. Universities would have a freaking field day.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not only that, but it would go ahead and it goes back to what I was saying about legitimacy. You know what I mean? If they were able to do that, for all the guys out there that are looking for chupacabras and lizard man and Loch Ness monsters and whatnot, those right there all of a sudden get some credibility just by the discovery of a Sasquatch. You catch my drift on
that. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's basically what the science is missing. You know what I mean? I mean, going back to my giant squid thing, a giant squid – prior to all that, was just another myth. It was right up there with the mermaid. But then one was found, and now all of a sudden, guess what they're doing right now as we speak? They're researching those damn things. So, again, that could be the thing that breaks the ice and does introduce some type of federal funding, you know, into the science.
And, I mean, and I know it sounds like I'm dropping names, but famous from the Animal Planet's TV show Finding Bigfoot, Cliff Barrickman, who I had the pleasure of meeting and then interviewing for the documentary I've got coming up, he had said during his interview that, you know, it's going to be all of the, you know, the crazies and nut jobs like us that once this thing is found to be a real species, that then will need us to guarantee that it gets protection. And basically that was just such a true statement, because imagine the validation that all of these, you know, civilian, you know, scientists, as we call them, are going to have if this ever is validated. But then you have folks like Cliff and the rest of us that then you're going to have to fight for the fact that this needs to be a protected species, and that's where you're going to have the government involved again, and that money that flows through, you know, people's hands so easily that could be lost and some could be gained, you know.
I want to put two and two together, and David, it's going to probably piggyback on what you were going to say. Papa Stroh, you talked about the Nephilim, and we have a pretty good idea that Teddy Roosevelt started the National Park System, and one thing is, you know, he had his experience with Bigfoot. That's what we believe, correct?
Right.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a fact. That is a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, but let's do some deductive logic here. If Bigfoot was simply just another standard biological species, then what would be the problem with categorizing it and going on? Because there are large animals. And the hippo is probably larger than Bigfoot, and we've categorized mm-hmm. that. Therefore, if there is a push to keep some species uncategorized, that species must not be what we would call natural. That makes
right.
logical sense. It just makes logical sense that there must be something about it that would cause a problem if we found
right.
out about it. Therefore, that leads you
mm-hmm.
directly to the fact that Papa Stroh's idea might be as correct as it can be. And Darth Bill, there is your simple explanation just by using a little bit of logic. Because, you know, if there's a big cat out there, if there's a big gorilla out there, sure, let's find it and we'll let the biologists go crazy and we'll let them put interest
right.
in their categories. But if there's something not right about it, then that's why we can't fly drones over national parks. That's why we are limited to access.
And that's why I have agreed with the fact that you have someone like Teddy Roosevelt that had an encounter and subsequently ended up creating, you know, your National Park Service and your Department of Interior and everything, because it is something that doesn't, like you said, doesn't need to be categorized. And, I mean, goodness gracious, when I was hunting, you know, you give forest rangers or park rangers, they have the power to seize your vehicle and everything. They've got more authority than your local police
yep.
do. And so, therefore, when you've got something like the Department of Interior that can step in and tell a police officer that's giving a report about a Bigfoot that he had to take on a 911 call, telling him to keep it quiet and shut up, and when he decides not to, that he needs to resign, you've got some power right there. So, yeah, I agree. I think that he, honest to goodness, had a real encounter and therefore went back to the heads of state at that time and said, hey, there's something out there and we got to do something. And so they basically put up these invisible fences, if you will, around all of this forest land to tightly control what they had found in there and the access to it.
Okay, well,
it seems as though
Dave, please go ahead.
No. I mean, I totally agree because, I mean, it makes a, you know, and just a quick point, kind of off topic on that, but, you know, we spoke about the Regina brothers that are up there digging at the Oak Island. Let's just say those guys do find something of some type of significance. How quick would the government move in and put eminent domain in, or how quick would those guys disappear? In the event they found something more than a box full of gold coins, if they found the Ark of the Covenant or they found something like that, how quick would it be shut down and denied? You see what I'm saying? Much less, you know, verified. You know, it'd be more shut down, saying, "Ah, yeah, the Leginas, yeah, they're a bunch of knuckleheads." And it is the very opposite. It's the fact they found something amazing, the government shut it down quick. And remember old Raiders of the Lost Ark. What are you going to do with the Ark?
Yeah.
We've got our top men working on it.
That's why you have it when you do this. And guess what is going to be surrounded? We are going to be surrounded by lots of reporters. So there's no way
true.
For the government to come swooping in. Once this gets going, if you're going to find anything, you're going to have instant worldwide access.
It is, and it's good, like you said,
I mean,
instant words.
Think about this.
By
we're
the
just
way,
thinking that,
go ahead.
They could freaking Facebook Live this.
Yeah.
Imagine
good
that.
Point.
Oh, Lord.
Good point. Yep. Yeah. Yep. There may be another facet to that right there too. You know, everybody goes
way,
to Facebook Live.
Totally off topic, but you brought up the Indiana Jones Ark of the Covenant thing, and I have got to, being a Star Wars fan and being Darth Vader, I've got to prove the tie-in with Harrison Ford and the latest Star Wars movie, the freighter that Harrison Ford and Chewbacca, Han Solo and Chewbacca had. It was basically a freighter with a bunch of cargo containers around it, and if you will find the book that has the incredible cross-sections, you will find that one of those cargo containers has the same number on it as the container that the Ark of the Covenant was put in at the end of Indiana Jones.
Oh, wow.
Movie.
How cool is that?
That's
awesome.
But it's totally off topic,
oh,
but
yeah.
You know, you brought it up, so I had to point it out.
Well done.
All right, well, I'm going to take over. I'm going to take back control of your television set and say, first of all, thank you to Darth Bill Lancaster. Thank you to Papa Stro Maestro, Dave Atwell, Anthony Dowling. This has been nothing short of amazing. So what I will offer up to everyone is this discussion will continue at the only con that is capable of handling it, which is CryptoCon in Charlotte. And as we promised last week, this will be our panel. We'll also add Greg Bo Watson to it. And we'll be the closing event for CryptoCon on Sunday, October the 1st. And don't miss it. I want to thank everyone else again. Now, next week, we got a special guest, Pop Stro and Dave Atwell. We got Mississippi McQueen and Tornado Bay.
Oh, no way.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
We met her and her band at Steampunk Mid-Atlantic. So much fun. She's agreed to be on, and we're just going to have a blast. And then we've got hopefully an author of about some haunted locations the next week. That author will be at CryptoCon. So we've got a lot going on as we move toward October 1st, CryptoCon, and September 30th, A Night with Papa Stro Maestro. So our special edition of Comic-Con Stars is over. Thanks again to everybody for being here. And we will talk again soon. We'll all be together. Anthony, can you join us at CryptoCon as well?
I'm going to certainly try. I just want to do a quick shout out to Papa Stro. You are awesome, buddy. You are awesome.
Oh, thank you much, sir. Oh, that means so much. You're amazing.
Stro,
thank you for everything, really.
You might have hit the nail on the head that I got my conclusion from, and that came directly from you. So, yeah. You're awesome. All of you are awesome. And thanks again. We will see everybody next week. Special guest, Mississippi McQueen and Tornado Bait on Comic-Con Stars. Thanks. We'll see you next week, 9 p.m. on Thursday night. Cheers.
And Dr. John, if I may say, make sure that everybody realizes the reason that I'm talking to you folks is I've got a movie, documentary, Cultured Bigfoot, that'll be coming out late this winter, hopefully early December or early January, and they can go on my YouTube channel, DarthBill68, to find all of my videos, including my Bigfoot BS videos, and they can go on Facebook to Cultured Bigfoot and to Bilko Productions with one L and actually see the trailer there, and please like it and share it and subscribe, and I'll look forward to sharing the poster art for the CryptoCon. I'll have it done by Glenn Paul Richardson of Sergeant Sasquatch creator and artist. And he will be contributing a lot of art to the project, as well as your very own Greg Bo Watson has agreed to throw in a couple pieces for the documentary. And basically that's my plugs, and just check out our Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization page.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Everybody have a good one. We'll see you next week.
God bless
you
all.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks for
God
listening.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.